2013 draws to a close, we here at the West Side thought it would be a good time to look ahead. Look ahead to what will surely be a busy year of campaigning and elections at all levels of government. So, to give you and your family something to discuss around the Christmas dinner table, we're diving into 2014, the year in politics, this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning in this Monday morning. I'm joined this hour by two political science junkies. First, joining me in our studios here in Eau Claire is Mort Cypress. Mort is an emeritus political science professor at UW-Eau Claire. Mort Cypress, thank you so much for joining us again.
I'm glad to be here, Rich.
Glad to have you back. You're somewhat of a regular, recurring kind of a guest on the show, at least this...
On and off, yes.
On and off, okay. And next, joining us from our studios in La Crosse, I'd like to welcome Joe Heim. Joe is an emeritus political science professor and analyst at UW-La Crosse. Thank you for joining us, Joe. How are you doing?
Hey, my pleasure.
Good to have you. Thank you. And for the listeners, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment about any election issue or political issue coming up or that you see before us right now, do dial in. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. And you can also post on the West Side Facebook page and leave a question or comment there. And we'll do our best to get it on the air. So the first question I think I'll throw to Mort. And, you know, it'll be interesting to hear the opinions of both of you, although not looking for a big debate. But these are big issues and big questions coming up. And the first one is, why hasn't Walker announced for governor yet, Mort?
Yeah, he doesn't have to. He's keeping himself loose, in a sense, to wait for a more dramatic time to make the announcement. There's no doubt that he's running. He's raising funds for it. He claims that he's going to wait until the legislative session is over. I think there are other concerns on his mind that he's simply going to wait and give himself more flexibility as to when he's going to announce.
Hmm. And Joe Heim, what are your thoughts? Is it unusual for an incumbent in a gubernatorial race to wait this long, or is it true to form?
Well, I think it's generally known on the inside that he is going to run for re-election. There were rumors in the last week or so that perhaps he was not going to run,
right,
which I thought was interesting. In fact, he put those to rest himself. He said, don't bet against it. So it's pretty clear he's running, and he's preparing to do that, but he's probably waiting for a time to make the formal announcement that would provide maximum publicity.
Maximum.
There's been a lot of stuff at the national level going on that I think he would probably want to avoid.
As in what?
The national stories. You know, the government closed down Obamacare.
Right. So he's trying to distance himself from that?
Yeah, make an announcement before Christmas gets lost in the shuffle, frankly. Mm. So he's waiting for a time to make it a little more obvious or a little more clear. That's not unusual at all, however.
Okay. Could any of this be playing into, you know, there's all kinds of talk about Walker possibly running for president. And obviously he can, I would think he can do both. Is that the case, Martin?
Yes, he certainly could do both. If it was obvious, if he was obviously running for president, it might cost him a little bit in the state, thinking that he won't have as much attention to the state. But that would be very minimal. And there would be nothing stopping him from putting on a full-fledged campaign for president after the 2014 elections.
Once he's maybe reelected already, he can focus on that.
If he's reelected, yes.
Sure.
In the chance he's not reelected, then he can forget about running for president as well.
Why is that?
He'll be a loser in his home state.
Yeah.
And that's an immediate loss of advantage.
Joe Heim, what are your thoughts? Do you think we're going to see a candidate Walker, at least? I mean, he's already, by a lot of measures, he's already dipped his toe in a little bit for president. He's done a lot of fundraising down in Iowa and across the nation. He wrote a book, which all kind of points towards what most people see as a possible run. Do you see that happening?
It sure looks like it. One of the basic, kind of obvious things is that he wrote a book. If you run for the presidency, you have to show your intelligence and get a book out there. He's done that. that immediately caused people to start thinking about it. But typically, in any list of presidential candidates, he is normally in the top five.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty clear. However, within a state, I think it's wise for him to focus on reelection, as Mort said. If he doesn't win re-election, he is not going to be a presidential candidate. So that seems unlikely. So he's going to focus, as far as his talk within the state of Wisconsin, is a focus on his state and running for re-election. However, as some people may know, he has not committed to complete a four-year term if, in fact, he gets re-elected. Again, that's a bit of a clue that he's certainly thinking seriously about the presidency.
Listeners, let's hear your thoughts on it. Do you think we're going to see Governor Walker running for president in 2014? There's been a lot of signs. A lot of people are thinking that he's hinting at it, but he hasn't officially announced. Give us a call at 800-228-5615 to let us know what your thoughts are on this, whether he'll do it and whether it would be good for the country. 800-228-5615. Mort, you were about to jump in?
I would add a possible, distant possible other scenario. Some people run for president in order to run for vice president. You don't usually declare you're running for vice president and expect to get the nomination because the presidential candidate's going to choose that person. But sometimes a presidential candidate who doesn't have that much chance at it at the presidency may really be eyeing the vice presidency. The vice presidency can be a way of advancing to the presidency in another 4 or 8 years. And Walker's a young enough person to be able to do that. So I wouldn't put that behind me. He will never admit that he's running for vice president.
Sure.
But you get there sometimes by running for president.
So then, who is it going to be? Is it going to be a Rand Walker or a Christie Walker ticket?
The Republican Party right now is split. Split between the more moderate wing of that party, more or less headed by Chris Christie now, in terms of public perceptions. And the more conservative side is rather divided at the moment, with several people being considered as possibilities.
And Joe Heim, that split has become really apparent recently with, you've got Speaker Boehner coming out and chastising some of the Tea Party funding groups that have pushed a lot of the freshman members of Congress towards more extreme positions. How do you think that's going to play into the future elections? Will that affect stuff down at the state level?
Well, it could. One of the issues that seems to pop up periodically is, and maybe one of the more important issues actually for 2014, is whether the Republicans can pick up 3 or 4 seats to take over the U.S. Senate. In the past, what they have done, frankly, is shot themselves in the foot by nominating extreme right-wingers that were unable to, they win a primary, but unable to win a general election, and that's kind of one of the issues. How, if you become less conservative, a little more moderate, will the Tea Party attack you? And which, of course, is going on,
mm-hmm.
and maybe put up a primary opponent. And this could be at any level of government, frankly, but the civil war is certainly broken out within the Republican Party, and it'll be interesting to see who seems to come out ahead on that one.
Could the Democrats come out ahead?
They could. In an election this coming November, if you look at history will tell you that this is generally a little more of a Republican year than a Democratic year. It's not to say that that anybody's anticipating a wave election such as 2010, when I think more than 60 congressmen, Republican congressmen, took seats from Democrats, but ultimately this should be a Republican year because of the at least historical circumstances. What gives the Democrats some hope is that the Civil War is going on, and the longer it goes on, the more likely they could be, in fact, be a net winner come November.
And since we're on the presidential side of things. Mort, who do you see going for the Democrats?
Well, at this time, it's either Hillary Clinton or any one of a number of people who might decide to run. Most of the potential candidates for president on the Democratic side are waiting to see what Hillary does. If she decides to run, perhaps she has already and has not indicated that, but if she does in fact run, the chances are most other potential candidates will drop out. Even Vice President Biden, I think, would probably drop out if she were to decide to run.
Interesting. Well, we've got our first caller of the morning, and a reminder to other listeners, you can call in and weigh in on the discussion this hour. We're talking about 2014, the year in politics, looking forward to all of the elections that are going to be coming up for president in the state. It's going to be for governor and a number of state assembly and state senate races, as well as congressional races. The number to call in and weigh in is 800-228-5615. That number again, 800-228-5615. First call of the evening, or afternoon, Monday morning, that is, used to be on Thursday afternoon. We've got Willem in Colfax. Willem, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we hear you all right. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say that what I think is at stake in this election is the continuing, with Governor Walker and the Republicans is, I don't like to hear the word conservative applied to them because I don't really think they are conservatives in the traditional sense of, say, like Eisenhower or those kind of conservatives, but conservative more, I think they're more radical. And I think that this austerity idea, there's a really good book about that. His author's name is Mark Blythe's book, and it's called Austerity, The History of a Dangerous Idea. And I think that Governor Walker's, if he is reelected, I think there's a lot at stake in our state, a continuing falling of our rating as one of the better school states in the country for education. We're already like below Mississippi. Our reading scores are falling. The money that's being poured into the governor's race by the people who believe in privatizing our school system, the people who believe that sand mining and iron mining are the ways of our future. And I think that, they're passing laws to end local control for these issues of sand mining.
Mm-hmm.
And,
gotcha.
They're making it difficult to sign, like there's a mile and a half offset for, or mile and a quarter they want to make it to from a residence to a wind turbine, but someone can build a sand mine right across the street from your house. So there's a bias, I think, involved. And so continuation, this election is very important in the direction of Wisconsin, what we want to be,
Sure.
Do we want our future to look like? Do we want to be concerned about our children's future? Do we want to, depoliticize the DNR? Do we want to do things like that or continue on this very radical path that I think the governor is taking us on?
Willem, we got you. Thanks so much for the call. Joe Heim, I'm going to go to you. What about the whole idea of, conservatism versus, the Tea Party mindset? Is there a difference there?
Well, the Tea Party really is pretty much an offshoot of the Republican Party. I think the more traditional Republicans, the establishment Republicans, saw the Tea Party movement in 2010 as a vehicle to help them take over Congress. But they now are essentially caught in a situation where they have to still deal with the Tea Party. And essentially what you have is a war between the traditional conservative Republicans versus the more right-wing radical Tea Party group. And it's not at all clear, frankly, who's going to win. I think this recent budget deal was the first real indication that some people in Congress, the Republicans in Congress, are ready to stand up to Tea Party threats. The fact that the Tea Party and some of the conservative, very conservative groups out there came out against the Walker plan, the budget plan that. Without even reading it, with John Boehner saying something, I think to use a quote, he said that was ridiculous.
Oh, you mean
that tells you right.
The Paul Ryan
budget
plan.
The deal.
Yeah,
the Ryan budget plan. Yeah, I'm sorry. And it tells you that the fight is essentially broken out into the open, and how this carries out, nobody really knows. The longer this civil war continues, the more likely the Democrats could pick up seats.
And Mort, what about the election in Wisconsin for governor? being as monumental in the scope and scale and importance as Willem was explaining. Do you see it the same way?
Well, it's I would put it, I would restrict the way I look at it a little bit. Elections are often won based on the local level. For a governorship, it means what's going on in Wisconsin, not necessarily nationwide. The main evidence we have right now is a recent poll done out of Marquette University, and it's become a pretty established poll in a relatively few years. That poll had it very close. They had Walker ahead of one candidate by 2 percentage points and another candidate by 4 percentage points. That's extremely close for an incumbent governor who's widely known and whose potential opponents are not very well known. It tells us something about the state of the state in terms of its divisions. Now, not everybody voting for Walker is an ideological conservative. But on the other hand, at this far ahead, it's hard to say with certainty that these numbers reflect what's going to actually happen.
This far ahead, you're right. We're a long ways ahead. And if I remember correctly, maybe I'm getting things mixed up, but before the recall election, I thought there were some polls that showed Governor Walker and Barrett being fairly close, and then Barrett lost pretty handily.
A lot of that had to do with turnout and whose forces turned out in stronger numbers. Mm-hmm. Earlier on, those people opposing Act 10, the legislation that ended union rights for the most part in the state, for public employees, that is, the feelings were very strong and very immediate. As that faded a little bit, the people supporting Walker were clearly a little more enthusiastic, and that affected the turnout. Another factor that played a role there and shifted at least a couple of percentage points in Walker's favor is some people believed that it was not appropriate to try to recall someone just because you disagreed with them on a particular issue. Mm-hmm. And even though they might not vote for Walker in the next general election, they weren't going to vote against him in the recall because they thought that was the wrong way to go.
Maybe essentially voting against the recall.
Yes.
In theory. Gotcha. We're talking about 2014, the year in politics. We've got Mort Cypress and Joe Heim, two political science experts, junkies, if you will, who follow the state, local, and national politics obsessively. Well, by training, I guess. Mort is a UW Eau Claire Emeritus of Political Science, and Joe Heim is the same at UW-La Crosse. The number to call in, 1-800-228-5615. And right now we've got a call from Eau Claire. Tim, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling in.
Good morning. I'm basically how I see this upcoming election cycle is it's going to really rely upon the Democrats taking an adult stance. What I mean by that is they have great weapons in the fact that they have a do-nothing Congress that most people see as the Republicans' fault, and a Republican governor who promised 250,000 jobs and has fallen drastically short. They basically need to take an adult stance and say, hey, guess what? They didn't do the job right. You know, sometimes you need to rethink things, and let's get this done.
Do you think they're doing that effectively yet, or have?
I don't think so. I think they're relying upon the news media to point that out. I think realistically, some of them might be smart to maybe hire some people from the Daily Show to help them out.
That's an interesting concept. Thanks so much, Tim, for the call. What about that 250,000 job promise that Governor Walker made during his campaign, then candidate Governor Joe Heim? Is that going to be the linchpin in this election?
It certainly is going to be a target for ads. I think it's pretty clear right now that they aren't going to get the Walker administration isn't going to get close to 250,000. What we've seen over the last 6 to 9 months is cherry picking of statistics in terms of any given month as to whether or not job growth is higher or lower than national numbers, or what is a predicted fate of the economy in Wisconsin, how are things looking here, basically, how favorably we are to business. But essentially, it's going to be cherry-picking statistics. But the one statistic that cannot be cherry-picked is the 250,000. And I think the Republicans are going to have a problem with that, frankly, because it's very clear they're not going to get to that point. But there's going to be a focus as explaining whether that's true or not. And a normal economic rebound, 250,000 was not an excessive promise, frankly. But this is not a normal rebound, and unfortunately for the governor, the numbers are not coming in as well as he would like. So the Democrats are going to use this as probably the primary statistic against him.
And Mort Sypris, we've seen Governor Walker use different metrics for his job creation, and now we're talking about the National Reserve Bank of Philadelphia looking at projected. And it's not even a hard number. It's just kind of a feeling about the economy. Do you agree with Joe Heim that this, that the Democrats will use this heavily, and B, that it, in all normal years it might have worked, that kind of a promise, but then this year it did not?
They'll undoubtedly use it, but a lot will also depend on the state of the economy as we approach the election. If the economy is generally growing at a somewhat faster pace than it has been for these last couple, 3 years, then it would dilute that argument, even if the number is not being reached. Voters don't necessarily remember numbers. So the statistic whether or not somebody is giving you the exact number in new jobs is going to hang on people's heads very strongly. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if the sense of the public at election time is that the economy is getting better, I think I'm going to be doing better in the next year or so, then that's going to help incumbents. And that would include Walker in that kind of a situation. And that may very well be a conundrum for the Democrats, because at the national level and in running for Congress, if everybody has a sense that things are getting better, then indeed that would help Democrats at that level. But where you have governors, Republican governors in place, that same thought may help them that things are getting better.
With that, let's go to the phones for one more call before we take our first break. We're going back to Eau Claire. Joan, you are on the air. Thanks so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I do agree with the previous caller indicating that Walker exposes extreme and radical legislation in action, so I appreciate him mentioning that. Now, after Walker began his 2011 attack on public workers, and we all learned what was really in the Act 10 legislation before they were able to ram it through, mm-hmm. It became clear to most of us that Walker has always had political aspirations far beyond that of the governor of our beloved state. Someone who is being paid to govern Wisconsin, Walker certainly spends a large portion of his time outside of the state touting Tea Party interests and genuinely promoting himself. But I do have a question for you, guests, if I'm allowed time.
Absolutely. What's the question?
So many of us are very, very curious about the most recent John Doe investigation. The high-powered national attorneys are lining up to defend these mm-hmm. Republican groups affiliated with the 2012 recall elections.
Very, very true. And thanks so much for that, Joan. Let's go to, Mort, I'll start with you. This second John Doe investigation, we're still foggy on what it's all about, but it seems to be about coordination maybe between candidates and super PACs or the right-leaning money groups as well. Is that going to hurt Walker in a general election for governor?
It would help only if there's an indictment that comes down. But as long as it remains secret, and John Doe investigations are supposed to remain secret, there would have to be leaks of various sorts to play a role. If there's an actual indictment, that would become public. That would hurt him. Mm-hmm. But I'm not about to predict that that Walker himself would be indicted. It's possible that representatives of some of these groups could be indicted, and that might have no effect on Walker at all. After all, some of his people, when he was county executive in Waukesha County, were not only indicted but were convicted, and it had no effect on Walker whatsoever.
And Joe Heim, if history shows us anything, will this have any impact at all on a campaign by Governor Walker?
I agree with Mort on that. If you look back at the first John Doe investigation, despite the aides of his essentially ending up in jail,
there were convictions.
It didn't really have any effect. Yeah, it didn't really. A number of convictions, it still didn't have any effect on him. Mm-hmm. Plausible deniability, I guess I'll throw in, is the term used, because he himself was investigated, but and he spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees protecting himself. But clearly there wasn't enough information to go forward. And the same is probably true with this John Doe, too. My understanding is that this has to do with collaboration between outside groups and recall elections, and it's fairly widespread, apparently, and widespread in the sense that the John Doe isn't just directed in Milwaukee or
right.
anyone one area.
Got a but number of counties.
How far this goes and when it goes, these things tend to take longer than people expect. So I right now it does not appear to be something that's going to be affect the governor's race. At this point, anyway.
Well, let's take a break. After the break, I want to talk about the challenger, possible challenger to, one known challenger and another possible challenger to Governor Walker in the 2014 race for Wisconsin governor. Also, we want to get through the congressional and some of the state races as well. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We're talking about 2014, the year in politics on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about 2014, the year in politics. A lot of elections coming up, and we've got two political science experts on the show to talk about races at the state, national, and local state legislative races as well. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615, or you can post a question or comment on the West Side Facebook page. We've got Joe Heim. He is an emeritus professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. We've got Mort Cypress, emeritus professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire. Again, 800-228-5615. Mary Burke is definitely the Democratic Party pick, at least from what we've seen in the media, for governor. In fact, there's been some interesting developments on the Democratic side. You talk about a civil war on the conservative side. There's been some disagreement over how to proceed, Mort Cypress, as far as the Democrats are concerned, in governor. Mary Burke was kind of the choice. She just kind of emerged. And then we heard there was another person, Kathleen Vinehout, and there were some that actually voiced some concerns and they don't want a primary. So what are your thoughts on the way the rollout of Mary Burke happened by the part of the Democratic Party?
Well, some of the Democratic Party leaders, I wouldn't say the Democratic Party in general. Most people weren't thinking that much about the governor's race at this point. It's more like us junkies, I suppose you might say, who are thinking more about it. But some of the Democratic Party leaders were looking for a candidate who had personal funds that could come to play in a campaign. Mary Burke seemed to be a choice, especially by those around Madison, and that's where Mary Burke lives as well. And they began pushing for her to become the Democratic candidate. And they're hoping that by a number of the party's leaders coming behind her, that it would dissuade anyone else from running in a primary.
You actually had Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who I think she's the chair of the National Democratic Party, saying in Milwaukee that a primary would be a bad idea. Dave Obie has said the same thing. And Joe Heim, what are your thoughts about that? Is that just logical thinking that, well, you can't spend money fighting each other? Or is it more about just what are your thoughts on that?
I've always disagreed that primaries are not a good idea. There's exceptions to that, obviously. And the exception would be if you had, say, two or three candidates that beat each other up so badly in the primary that whoever wins comes out as damaged goods. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I think Mary Burke needs a primary. And I know that the OBs of the world and other the leaders of the Democratic Party don't agree with that. But I don't think she's that well known. And I think, frankly, a primary would help her, frankly. But she has come out of nowhere, basically. And to be honest with you, the leaders of the party seem to have started to support her, basically, pretty strongly. But the grassroots really have not come along just yet. I think they're fairly skeptical because it's very clear that she has some pluses and minuses. And one of the minuses, of course, is she's not that well known. And her name identification is not out there. Is she really a heavyweight candidate? I think the rank and file of the Democratic Party are watching this very carefully to see whether or not she, in fact, should be the candidate. The idea that she could fund herself with her own money, basically, is a real plus. And I think what that allows the Democrats to do is to focus their money on, say, the state senate or state assembly races or congressional, for that matter.
Mort Cypress, primary good idea for Democratic candidates for governor?
Probably not. Probably is, rather, say. If you have candidates who are not well-known, then there's a better chance of getting reasonably well-known if you do have a primary. The media is not going to pay a whole lot of attention. An awful lot of name recognition is developed through news coverage. And the media is just not going to pay a whole lot of attention prior to a primary if there is no contest. And what that ends up meaning is that you really have to expend even more funds without a primary on just gaining name recognition and not be able to map out your themes, your positions, and your attack on your major opponent. So a primary does help to give publicity because that's when the media gives more coverage to it.
Right, out of default, basically, it does, because there's an election to be covered. Now, I want to talk about Congress, congressional races, and first I wanted to start off with, it starts up in northern Wisconsin, but it does reach down, post-redistricting, down into our listening area and here in western Wisconsin. That's Sean Duffy, and Sean Duffy, a Republican from Ashland, he is... got an official challenger now. It's Ashland City Council member Kelly Westlin. There's not a lot of press on her, but she's served on the Ashland City Council for 2 years. She's involved with some more liberal groups like Alliance for Sustainability and the Bayfield Regional Food Cooperative. One thing that's interesting that I want to kind of bring up right away, though, is while I was trying to find out a little bit more info on her this morning, I found westlinforcongress.com. And after clicking the link, it turned out to be a smear website set up by the Republican Party of Wisconsin. I'm not sure if you guys have seen this, but Joe Heim, what are your thoughts on that? Is that dirty politics or is that clever politics, stealing that domain name and then using it against her?
It's clever and dirty. That's the kind of stuff that goes on these days. Playing those kind of games really... It defeats the purpose of what politics is all about, but that's one of the games that they play to try to take away an obvious name that she might want to use for that type of advertising. So I it's kind of silly, frankly. Hmm. That is supposed to be the congressional districts in Wisconsin, the third district, excuse me, the seventh district, the Sean Duffy, mm-hmm. is supposed to be the only one that's going to be really contested. The rest of the districts seem pretty safe.
Okay, and he won pretty handily, Mort Cypress, over Pat Kreitlow in 2012. Do you think it'll be a close race, depending on what you know about Kelly Westlin?
I don't know a whole lot about Kelly Westlin. But even without knowing a whole lot about her, Duffy had a fairly well-known opponent the last time around and won handily. And one has to point to the reapportionment that took place after the 2010 election. Mm-hmm. The Republicans controlled both the House and the Senate, the Assembly and the Senate, and the governorship. They were able to draw the lines that they wanted to draw. And they drew them in such a way as to enhance a number of Republican positions, and only a more limited number of Democratic positions. And this is true for both Congress and the state legislature. And so Duffy, in his district, the 7th District, lost some key Democratic votes. He didn't shed any tears over that. and in the 3rd Congressional District, Ron Kind gained those Democratic districts and lost some Republican areas, which went mainly to Duffy. So the reapportionment, at least in the short run, made both of those seats relatively safe seats when in previous years they might have been more competitive.
We're talking this hour about the 2014 year in politics, a lot of elections coming up. We're speaking with Emeritus Political Science Professors Mort Cyprys of UW-Eau Claire and Joe Heim of UW-La Crosse. You can chime in at any time this hour and give us a call. Let us know what your thoughts are. The number is 1-800-228-5615. The number again, 800-228-5615. And Joe Heim, speaking of redistricting, Ron Kind's up for reelection as well. You're right down there in his home turf. He crunched Ray Boland pretty well. And do you see there even being a Republican challenge to him?
I assume there will be a Republican challenge. I mean, you just don't let congressional candidates or incumbents, you know, off free. But the district has essentially been moved from being what looked like a western Wisconsin crescent. Now it looks like a Y, essentially. And it goes up to the Wausau area, Wisconsin, Stevens Point area, and makes that district much more safe, frankly. And that's why I've not even heard a name mentioned. There are people that are talking under the table about an opponent for him, and I expect there will be one. But his district has become, frankly, quite safe, as Sean Duffy's has become a little bit safer as well. I want to comment on the Sean Duffy race 2 years ago against Pat Kreitlow.
Sure.
That district, to show you how that district has changed from what was a fairly Democratic area over the Obie era, in a year which Barack Obama handily carried the state of Wisconsin, the 7th district actually went slightly for Mitt Romney. And that gives you an idea that that district has become more Republican over time with the redistricting.
Well, that part of the state usually is solid blue, right? Up northern Wisconsin, you know, Douglas, Bayfield, Ashland counties, all that. I mean, you got the old labor and all that jazz up there.
It's a little more mixed now than it used to be. Scott Walker actually did fairly well in that area as well. I don't know about the statistics on that, but he carried a number of counties in northern Wisconsin, which in the past had been carried by Democrats.
Now, Mort, Joe Heim mentioned the redistricting, and you wouldn't, with a congressional seat, you wouldn't not run a challenger. Well, after redistricting, we saw in Wisconsin for state races, there were, I think I did a story, there were like 20 almost, where the Republicans didn't even bother running a candidate. Mm-hmm. So how effective, I mean, how safe as far as the state assembly and state senate, how safe are Republicans?
In the short run, probably pretty safe. There are relatively few areas that are truly competitive right now. That can change. Sometimes an incumbent, whether Democratic or Republican, ends up with foot-in-the-mouth disease.
And we saw that
up in the Rice Lake area in this last campaign. If that occurs in a few districts, it can produce some legislative shifts. Over the somewhat longer run, six or eight years after a reapportionment, there may have been enough demographic changes in a district to produce change. And so sometimes the reapportionment that's done in 1 year, 6 or 8 years later, becomes a rather different district because of demographic changes. That can affect some of the outcomes as well.
Well, at first blush here, it looks like there are, 16 or 17 state senators up for election. I could be off on that. But do you see, Mort, with redistricting in mind and also just some of the candidates that are running, do you see there being a shift in the Senate, the state Senate, at all?
It'll be difficult for that to happen, but it's a little more possible because the division isn't that great. you have only if the Democrats picked up a couple of seats, they would pick up control of the state Senate, and so the concentration in the reapportionment was over assembly districts. And you just take three assembly districts to make up a Senate district. And the lines might have been different if they had paid more attention to the Senate districts. And so that leaves a little greater possibility of a competitive district in some parts of the state.
Joe Heim, what are your thoughts? Do you see any flips happening in the Senate? I think it's safe to rule that out in the Assembly, but maybe not.
Yeah, well, the Assembly is 60-39, and I think the best that the Democrats are hoping for is to pick up a few seats. I understand that they have about 10 to 12 districts which either Tammy Baldwin or President Obama carried in 2012, and therefore they at least look like they're contestable.
Okay.
But whether or not you could pick up that many, it's just not likely. It looks like it's going to be a couple cycles. I do agree with what Mort said about demographic changes. The best plans of mice and men can be changed over time. But going back to the state Senate, which is now 18-15, despite the fact that President Obama handily carried the state of Wisconsin, despite the fact that several hundred thousand, if you added up all the votes for Democratic state Senate candidates and all the state Republican candidates, the Democrats actually had a net gain of several hundred thousand votes. You would have thought they would have taken and maintained control of the state Senate. In fact, they lost two seats, and the Democrats essentially lost control, despite the fact that more people voted for Democratic candidates than Republicans. This gives you an idea that gerrymandering and the redistricting certainly worked to the advantage of the Republicans. So I'm not, at least in the short term, optimistic that the Democrats could, in fact, retake the state Senate. But it's as Mort said, it's you never know for sure. If this is in fact a big Democratic year, it could happen. If it's a normal year, the Republicans should maintain control.
And very quickly, redistricting reform. We've seen that proposed by some Democratic lawmakers. Joe, do you see that getting a vote?
No.
Mort?
That's a quick answer.
No, I agree.
Given the fact that virtually almost all the major newspapers in the state of Wisconsin have had an ongoing campaign asking for at least a public hearing on redistricting, and they have not even gotten a public hearing on it, the leadership in Madison of the Republican Party is not going to let this happen.
Yeah,
so Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, what you really have is in these demands for a change in reapportionment is you're asking the party that benefited from the current system to change the system. That's not going to happen. It doesn't happen in most fields of thought. Not just politics. If you're on a successful side, mm-hmm. you don't look to change what you've been doing.
Right. With that, let's take our final break. We'll be right back with Emeritus Political Science Professors Joe Heim of La Crosse, UW-La Crosse, that is, and Mort Cypress of UW-Eau Claire. We're talking about 2014, the year of the election coming up. We've got a number of races that we'll be focusing on much more thoroughly next year, but we're getting a quick jump on it right now. If you'd like to call in with a comment or question for either of our guests, the number is 1-800-228-5615. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can dial in at 1-800-228-5615. We're talking this hour about politics and the 2014 elections that will be fast upon us. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few campaign ads on the TV right now. But we're talking about the races for we've got the congressional races. There are some Senate races, not in Wisconsin as far as I know, but we've got state Senate, state Assembly, and, of course, the big one, the gubernatorial election. The number to chime in, 1-800-228-5615. I'm joined by Mort Cypress and Joe Heim, two emeritus political science professors and all-around politics enthusiasts, we'll say. We'll put it that way. State Senate, we've got Bob Jauch, who has announced his retirement as senator after, I don't know, 200 years, something like that. I'm kidding, obviously, but it was a long time. That's the 25th State Senate District. Mort Cypress, Do you see Republicans rushing in to turn this blue district red, or is it pretty safe to say it's going to stay blue?
The reapportionment probably pretty much made sure it would stay blue. And so we'll see a change in who the senator is up there with Jack retiring. I don't think it'll produce a change in party in that district. The same thing is true down in the in this part of the state, the Eau Claire, and going further west and south of here. Kathleen Vinehout is clearly seriously considering running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
And if she does, she has to give up her Senate seat.
She does. I wasn't sure of that.
Yes. And that would open up that seat. But if we keep in mind that two of the three assembly districts that make up that Senate district are heavily Democratic, and one represented by Chris Dano, the other by Dana Wachs, whoever decides to run and get the nomination for that Senate seat is likely to carry it. The Democratic is likely to carry it. And so we wouldn't see a change in party control in that Senate district either, even though there could be a change in personnel.
Joe Heim, but this was pre-2011 redistricting, but when Vinehout took the seat originally, wasn't it pretty close down in her state Senate district?
Yes, it was. In fact, if you look at the history of that district, it has gone back and forth with pretty much regularity. So if this was let's put up a scenario here. If Kathleen Vinehout runs for governor, that opens up that seat. Chris Dano, I think, would be a very strong candidate. But I also think that typically, if this was a Democratic year, Chris Dano could possibly win, very likely win. If it was a Republican year, however, I think that district could be up for grabs.
Hmm.
So it depends a lot on what Kathleen Vinehout does. She had a very close election, but frankly, a lot depends on what she decides she wants to do. As an incumbent, I would think that she'd be relatively safe this time around. She's become better known.
Very well known in the district. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if she runs for re-election, it just depends on, she's still toying with the idea of running for governor.
Will she do it?
If I was betting on it, I think there's a lot of pressure on her not to do it.
Really?
That's pretty clear to me.
She's hired the staffer. Yeah. She's done a lot of the stuff, though.
Yeah. I wondered, she had a recent auto accident. I wondered whether that was going to play any kind of role in her thinking about, can she really, mount a campaign against the establishment candidate, Mary Burke.
Mm-hmm. That's right. She was in an accident, and from what I understood, she broke her arm, but she's in good health right now. Mort Cypress, what are your thoughts? Is she going to run for governor, and would it be even worth her time? Because she didn't fare too well in the last one.
No, she didn't. But the fact that she has hired staff specifically for a gubernatorial run is an indication of where her thinking is going.
Mm-hmm.
If she was really up in the air about running, I don't think she'd be expending funds on staff for that run. And as for her Senate seat, the same reapportionment that secured a lot of seats for the Republicans made this Senate district more Democratic. Vinehout didn't have the advantage of all of the city of Eau Claire being part of her district. It is now.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some other areas further east of Eau Claire which have been shifted to a Republican Senate district. That reapportionment may make anyone running in that Senate district a little safer as a Democrat than for the Republicans. So the closeness of previous elections may not be as much of a factor as we might think. I would add also for running for governor, in that same Marquette poll that had a very close race between Walker and any one of two Democratic candidates, Vinehout was one of those two,
right,
on the list, and she's a relatively unknown person, just as Mary Burke is, and that would certainly indicate that she might be able to make a run for it She has a base of support of people who may not really even know much about her or anyone else other than Walker. But it's a starting point that she might consider in running.
We've got about a minute and a half left, gentlemen, and I'm going to go round robin. I'll start with you, Joe Heim. 2012, with all the recalls and everything, we saw record election spending in Wisconsin. Is that the new normal, and will we break that record next year?
It seems like we're on an uphill ski hill here. In other words, every 2 years, it seems like we break the records of the previous 2 years. So I think it's going to be a record year.
More Cyprus.
I think we're going to see more outside money coming in than we'd ever been seen before.
Okay, sorry to cut you off. Mort, very quickly.
Those gaining the most will be those people selling the advertising.
Right. Radio, TV stations eat your heart out, I guess. Not public radio, though, because we don't play that game. But
Thank goodness.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much for your discussion. That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests. They are Joe Heim and Mort Cyprus. You guys rock, and I know that you'll be keeping an eye on the elections. We'll chat again, I'm sure, before November of next year. I'd also like to thank Tiffany Coggins for handling on-air production this hour. Also thanks to Rachel Vick for promotions and Rachel Minsky for producing the hour. Next week, we'll have a rebroadcast from our archives as we will be off for the holidays. Have a happy holiday yourself, and we'll chat again December 30th.